Okay. Our next presenters, our next presentation, will be on a piece of software that made the Wired's top 10 vaporware of 2001. Wired has these awards every year, and they made it. So there's been lots and lots of expectations for this, and we finally actually get to see it after much time. And so the presenters, so this is Peekabooty, which was a great source of news coverage for this event before it happened. So that also says a lot about how much expectations there is. So this is Peekabooty, and the presenters are Paul Baranowski and Joey DeVia. And here they are.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, before we begin, we'd like to express our gratitude to everybody who showed up at CodeCon, did wonderful presentations, and especially to the organizers for pulling this together so quickly. We need it a little bit louder, so I think we should cheer Bram on, crazy Microsoft style. Woohoo! Woohoo! Give it up for Bram! Give it up for Len!
Developers.
I love this conference.
All right. Okay. This talk is on Peekabooty. I named it Peekabooty Forever because of Wired's article. I'm envious of the winner of the Vaporware 2001, Duke Nukem Forever. So I kind of wish I was in that spot. But there's always next year. So this is going to be a technical presentation on Peekabooty, and we're going to give a demo, sort of prove it's not vaporware, and this is going to be, and then basically you're going to tell me how it can be attacked, probably. So here's what I'm going to talk about: the purpose of Peekabooty, the history behind the project, the background that you need to know to understand the way it was designed. Then tell you the design, show you a demo, basically give you a FAQ, and then some future work. Hello. Okay. The purpose of Peekabooty is to get around censorship firewalls that are deployed nationwide in other countries.
Go ahead.
So basically, a user tries to browse to some censored web page, say CNN.com. The firewall checks if that's a blocked page, and if it is, it sends a web page back to the user saying, you can't look at this.
There are about 21 countries that practice this, which makes about hundreds of millions of internet users. Depending on the source, they say anywhere between 400 to 700 million internet users are surfing behind such firewalls.
Right, so the second question you ask is this a worthwhile project to be working on? Based on these statistics, you might think so, but you would also have to believe in free speech and the freedom for people to express and hold their own opinions, which I found actually is not very common in the United States and other supposedly free countries. As long as you believe in that, then it's a worthwhile project. Okay, some history behind the project. Started in July 2000. Design took place for 6 months. Not much happened for 9 months because everyone was working. And originally, there's a group of people, but eventually, finally, I quit my job and worked on it full time. So, starting 6 months ago. So some background you need to know to understand the design behind the project. The so a firewall can filter based on anything that's sent in the data stream, most notably the IP address and the port number you're trying to connect to, or the source IP address and the source port, as well as anything else in the data stream. Okay, so this is how things are censored. You have a user, you have a firewall. User makes a request for CNN.com. Firewall looks it up in some table, says, is CNN.com in my list? If yes, then send back a denied page. But firewalls have limitations, so it basically has to do all this on the fly, because if you were trying to log everything, obviously on one Ethernet connection for a full day, it adds up to 108 terabytes of data. So even logging 1% of that is a lot. That's 1 terabyte. So, or 0.1% is still 100 gigabytes. So you can't really log anything. You have to do everything on the fly. You have to use some sort of rule set. And even the rule set, you can't store too much state, because there's lots of connections, you know, that are going out of an entire country. There's usually millions.
And there would also be lots of rules to process as well.
So right. The more rules you have, the more processing power you need, and so forth.
So it's prohibitively expensive.
Okay, so this is how Peekaboo gets around the firewall. This is just to give you an overview, and then I'm going to go into much more detail. You have a user and a firewall. User asks some other node on the internet to fetch CNN.com for them. Firewall says, well, is that node in my list? And it's not. So the connection is allowed to another Peekaboo node. That request is forwarded through a random number of peers on the network. Eventually, one decides to serve the request, grabs CNN.com, sends it back through the network to the user. Okay, so obviously you can attack this network in many ways. So this is an overview of the threat model against Peekaboo. And when you have a distributed system, there's lots of ways to attack it. So the main one we want to overcome are passive attackers. And a passive attacker is the firewall itself. We want the firewall to be able to unable to detect that Peekaboo connections are being made through it. Okay? And then the second one is you have active attackers now. These are people running Peekaboo nodes that are trying to destroy the network in some way. So you have denial of service. This is pretty standard stuff. You can do this against any server, so I'm not going to go into that. The next one is IP blocking. So you run a firewall, and you run one or more Peekaboo nodes inside of it or outside of it, just communicating with the firewall somehow. They join the network, they connect to other Peekaboo nodes, they grab all the IP addresses of the nodes in the network and add them to their block list. So we have to protect against that. Another one is retribution. It's almost the same thing. Firewall runs Peekaboo node, so other Peekaboo nodes, grabs the IP addresses and instead calls the cops, and they arrest you. I want to add two more here that I left off the list for time reasons, but I should add anyhow. The other one is man-in-the-middle attacks. So you can basically, if you're one of the Peekaboo nodes, you can intercept a connection and do whatever you want with it. And the other one is spamming. So in that case, you serve them back the internet web page, and you just show them ads or something. Okay, so now that you sort of know how firewalls work and sort of how Peekaboo works, now we're going to talk in depth about the design. So there's four major design points I want to talk about. It's distributed. Each node is a client and a server. It uses steganography, which is a big term, which means hidden messages. You basically make something that's a secret message look innocuous. So example, storing some data, secret data inside of a picture or something would be an example of steganography.
Lord Baden-Powell, I think around World War I, used to draw maps of enemy territory, but he'd pretend that he was drawing patterns on monarch butterfly wings so he could always get them past the enemy when his stuff was checked.
Right, and those were maps, right?
Yeah, they were maps of enemy fortifications.
Right. So, steganography is used to get by the firewall. Next thing is anonymous connections. So you never know where a connection originated from. And the last thing is minimal discovery, which is an attempt to defeat the IP blocking active attacker. You only want to discover the minimum amount of nodes you need to get through the firewall. So the first design question was, should this application be centralized or decentralized? And you have your usual design choices. Centralized makes everything really simple. It's easy to program, but it's also easy to attack, both technically and legally, as we've heard in a panel discussion yesterday. So those were two main reasons we decided to go with a decentralized approach. Even though it is harder to program, you need to attack all the nodes in the network in order to take out the network. In a centralized approach, you take out the main server, the entire network goes down. Decentralized, you attack one node, just that part of the network goes down. So, and as well, legally, if you have a central server, they sue you, they take out the node that way.
Whereas with P2P, you can't do that. Foolish humans, you cannot sue the Borg.
So how do we get through the firewall? The way the application is actually written is layered, so we could replace the method we use now with something else. But right now, we're using SSL in the form of HTTPS. And we all know that e-commerce transactions go through SSL. So if the evil guys, the bad guys, the bad government wants to block Peekaboo D, they have to block SSL, which means they're blocking all of e-commerce, or they have to figure out a way to filter that SSL in some way.
Now, if you remember, of course, a single Ethernet connection is going to pump 108 terabytes a day, so it would be really, really difficult for a national-level firewall to pull off that kind of stunt.
Right. So Peekaboo D's tied to money, which... if some governments are part of the WTO and, if they're cutting off other businesses in other countries that way, they might not be so happy. The WTO might not be happy.
You don't want to see the WTO unhappy.
Okay, the next design point, the third one, is anonymous connections. This was originally designed to... prevent retribution-style active attackers. So, the bad guys are trying to track down the people running Peekaboo D nodes and then come and arrest them. And but it actually turns out to be not the best reason to do this. There hasn't been a single case that I've found where anyone has been tried or arrested or any sort of thing for reading data. What they do is they get the publishers. So Peekaboo D isn't about publishing, it's about getting the data. Anonymous web browsing, and it allows anonymous web browsing with anonymous connections. It's the same thing as crowds, if you ever heard of it. You basically route randomly through nodes in the network, and no one knows where the connection originated, even the next hop after the originator. So just to give you a little example here, you can't read that. Okay. Over there, it says origin, and it says node, destination. And then there's like clouds. This is standard network drawing like clouds of other nodes attached to those nodes.
I can be the packet. Just talk it through, and I'll pretend to be a packet.
Okay, well, so the origin wants to make a connection through the network. We use something called virtual circuits. And they work pretty simply. You send out a connect request. Inside it is a number. It says it's just a random number that the origin picks. And that node remembers it and says, well, should I terminate this connection or should I forward it on? And depending on the probability, it says, okay, well, I'll forward it on. I don't want to terminate this connection. So it forwards it on to the next node with a new number. So it says, okay, I got a connect request from this node with 1 in it. I'm going to send it to this node with 2 in it. So that when a packet comes back with 2 in it, I know to send it to this guy with 1 in it. So we make a request through the network. Eventually, someone decides to be the destination. And then they send an established packet back through to the origin. And thus, the virtual circuit is complete. But, and even the destination in this case. You don't know who the destination is. Last point I wanted to talk about in the design is minimal discovery. This is to do some attempt to prevent the IP blocking active attacker. This is the guy that tries to grab all the IP addresses in the Peekaboo D network and then add them to their block list.
And it's an interesting paradox, actually, because most P2P systems really, really, really want their nodes to be found and go to great pains to do that. We have the problem where you want to be found, yet you don't want to be found. It's a little bit of a paradox that way.
Right. This is the way that this system differs from all other P2P apps. And it's really infuriating. Really what you want to do is only discover enough to get through the firewall and no more. Okay. So there's two ways that that we're trying to stop this right now. So the first way is to suppress extraneous discovery messages. So the way you do this is you have some time period, T, and you have a maximum number of requests you can make in that time period. And I went overboard with my animations, and I have an animation of this. And so we have, say our time period is 5, whatever minutes, say, and maximum number of requests is 2. Discovery request comes in at time 10. Then another one comes in time 12. And then another one comes in at time 14. It's 3 requests in within 5 minutes, so you drop that one.
Basically, it's like trying
that's
to do multiple.
That's right there.
That
one's dropped. The last one is dropped, okay?
The principle's the same as trying to do multiple rapid postings to Slashdot.
Okay. So that's my extraneous animation. The other thing you do is that you, in this network, you can't have anything like a TTL, a time to live packet, which gets decremented at each hop or something. You can't have those here, because if you can, you can do stuff like Clip2 did with Nutella and map out the entire network within an hour. So everything has to be based on probabilities. So even discovery packets have to be based on probabilities. So you have with connect packets, you have a propagation probability, and the same thing with discovery packets. You say, should I forward this on to the next guy? With discovery, you also have a response probability, like should I answer this request? And these are all independent variables. So you can adjust them however you want to get, for example, I want an average of 4 hops away and only 2 requests to come back, or one answer to come back on average. And actually, the guys who wrote crowds actually came up with all these nice formulas that I used to calculate these probabilities. It's pretty straightforward anyhow. Okay, so what you want is the number of discovery requests served to be less than the rate at which new nodes are joining the network. This way, no one will ever be able to discover all the nodes in the network. And optimally, only the amount you need to get through through the firewall, but that's really hard to do. Like, you have to trust, say, oh, I only need 3 to get through the firewall. Yeah, sure, okay. An estimate of that is just keep the number of discovery requests served to be less than the rate at which new nodes enter the network. Oh, we're at the demo. All right. Demo. Okay. So there's 3 parts to this demo. Let's see. The first part I'll show you is the screensaver we have. So this is going to be sort of like study at home sort of thing. If people want to download it for instantaneous sort of feel good gratification, like I'm helping people.
Yeah. Part of the idea is that, of course, Peekabooty works best if there are lots of nodes, and part of that is to make sure that people feel good that they are contributing something. That's the beauty of the SETI at home screensaver. It shows you it's doing actual work. We're doing the same thing here. So I haven't started mine up yet.
Okay, so what you're seeing here is really bad display up here. I'm sorry, but we have like a little icon up there. It's just our logo.
Pika Bear.
and then the legend down the side says, this guy over here is you, and you're not connected to any nodes right now, and we're going to show you what happens when you start connecting the nodes, but the legend over here shows you what types of nodes you're connected to.
Okay, yeah, you've got, currently right now we're showing nodes in 3 different states. The normal looking smiley bear is basically a normal, unnatted, uncensored node. The smiling bear with the sunglasses is a bear behind a gnat. And then we have a little icon of a bear whose mouth has been duct taped over, and that is the censored bear. So that bear is probably surfing from behind a national firewall.
Okay, and the second part of this demo is the configuration interface. Right now it's a web-based interface. Eventually it's going to move to a normal GUI because you can get better feedback that way. But right now, just to throw something together, we've made a web interface. So there's 4 parts to the configuration screens. There's the summary screen, which is what you're seeing right now, but you can't really see. Let's try to zoom in. Okay, it has stuff about... has stuff about your computer, your IP address, your port, whether you're behind a NAT, whether you're censored. You have some options, which don't actually work right now, whether you can do fast routing, which is instead of routing randomly through the network, you just route through the fastest ping time node. You can also choose to not route through censored nodes. And then the last of the summary screen is number of connections you have, the number of nodes you know about. And then the rest of the screens are just to configure all this information. So let's go to the node manager. Okay. At the top, you can add a node. You can specify whether it's behind a NAT, censored, trusted. Actually, trusted doesn't work right now, but and then you have a list of the known nodes, and you can connect to them, delete them, edit them, whatever. So I know that Joey is at 199, mm-hmm. which is this guy. So if I connect to him.
Oh, let me let me start my node up.
Oh,
there we go. I do this to keep him on his toes.
Okay. We're connected, and then if we switch back to Peekabooty.
Big mode.
Oh, zoom out.
Wide mode.
Okay.
So anyways, the bear's smiling now because he's got a friend. And just to show a little activity, what we're doing is that neighboring node right now is going to orbits you. All your neighboring nodes orbit you. And in the next iteration of the UI, what we're going to do is neighboring nodes with faster round-trip times for pings will orbit around you faster. We're going to do that by distance-based. And I've totally forgotten what faster rotating bears means something. We'd written it out. But network distances are going to be represented by distances between other bears and your bear.
Right. Okay, so, and then this is where we would normally show you where it actually grabs web pages, but doesn't seem to, we tried to set up the network, but it didn't work.
We've been visited by Phil, the Dark Prince of Demos.
Yeah. But, I can tell you about something, what you would have seen.
It
you worked would have
at
seen,
home.
I would have, say, gone to /dot, and then... it would have grabbed the web page, but right now the application layer is only single-threaded, so it grabs each link one at a time. So that's one of the things we have to fix. But actually, the application layer, which is the whole web proxy thing, is the least developed part of this application.
So its performance is actually quite good, because what we have been using for testing at home is we've been using this Pentium 1233 or something like that?
It's 333.
333, yeah. A relatively slow machine by today's standards, and we still have single-threaded web fetching, and it is retrieving pages in very, very reasonable time. It's not so bad.
Yeah. So it's actually, way ahead. It's farther ahead than I thought it would be at this point. So, okay, let me see if there's anything else. And then there's, just to show you the rest of this interface, you can go to the connection manager and disconnect from a node. Eventually, this should be seamless to anyone running it, so they don't have to manually do anything. But we're in development phase, so we can't do that. Okay, now to finish up, we're at the sort of the FAQ part of this talk, and how do I zoom out of here? Reset? Okay, and a quote from, these are common arguments I get, a quote from everyone's favorite Star Wars character, "Used to people gonna die?" From episode one. Okay, so this means that people usually say, "Oh, if you run Peekabooty, then people are going to die because they'll be tracked down and killed on the spot or something." And as I pointed out before, no one's even been jailed for anything like this, as far as I know. And if you are going to do that, then you shouldn't be running anything like that, this, unless you are willing to take those risks.
We may have to put that in the end user license agreement.
We're not responsible for your death. Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay, the second thing is godlike attackers. These are the attackers with infinite resources. As all good cryptography people know, you should expect people to have infinite resources and the ability to crack your software and all that stuff. But... this doesn't actually happen in the real world. Even countries with lots of resources devote very little to their firewalls and stuff like that. For example, if you imagine that there are godlike attackers out there. You would never write a client-server program because anyone would just constantly DOS you all the time, and you'd say, well, there's no point in writing this application because someone might denial-of-service attack me or something. So, reasonable attacks I can listen to, though. The last one is China. Basically the argument here is if it doesn't work in China, then it's worthless. And there's lots of other countries besides China.
20 others.
Yeah. And hundreds of millions of other people besides China that are censored. So I'm not saying it doesn't work in China, but the argument is it has to work in China.
Yeah. And they probably are, of all the censoring nations, they're probably the best equipped to attempt to take on Peekabooty.
And China is imagined to be one of these godlike attackers, and they're really not that well organized. Yeah. Right, but those are sort of physical locations inside the country. Right, so anyhow, moving on. Next thing is, how are you going to deploy it? Hopefully through the help of some human rights organizations, SneakerNet, which means, actual real world, here's a disk, here's a CD, you mail a CD somewhere, whatever. Friends of friends. One interesting thing is you can get Peekabooty via Peekabooty, whereas someone gives you an IP address of a Peekabooty node, and you connect to it, make it your proxy, and download Peekabooty through it, because you can get around firewalls using
which
it.
Which is a handy little thing, actually. That's
It's also you could use any other proxy that you could happen to connect to
but
as well.
You really want to get Peekabooty via Peekabooty just because it's really cool and it's recursive.
Yeah. Okay, this used to be an interesting slide until last week. Peekabooty versus SafeWeb. If you haven't heard, SafeWeb has found a big hole in it,
mm-hmm.
where it makes it worse to use SafeWeb than to not use anything at all. So you can basically get all the web pages that the person visited before and after visiting your site that goes after SafeWeb. But this is also points out that it's good to have multiple projects working on the same thing. I know that I'm not the only one working on this type of project, and this isn't the only project that does this. So it's great to have all sorts of projects doing the same thing. If one of them doesn't work out, then the other ones might work out better. So anyhow, why is Peekabooty different than SafeWeb? Well, it's going to be open source. Well, it is open source, but no one knows where the CVS is.
It's a jar source.
And we'll distributed versus centralized. Appeal to selfishness. This is where this is why anonymous connections are good in Peekabooty, because it gives a reason for non-censored people to run it. If you want to be anonymous when you web browse, which I've met a lot of people that want to do that, you run a Peekabooty node and you get those benefits.
Because all your connections, all your web connections are now done via SSL, which is also great for anybody, especially who's getting into wireless surfing now.
Right. It also has the cool screensaver,
woo-hoo!
Which SafeWeb doesn't have. And we're not funded by the CIA.
Yeah, that's right. No way. We're funded solely by you and maybe whatever money I make on the street when I play the accordion.
Right. So what's in the future for maybe if something miraculous happens and we get $1 million? Internet spread spectrum. This is basically creating a whole bunch of virtual circuits to a specific destination and sending one packet over each circuit so that this is the same thing as radio spread spectrum. You send a little bit on each frequency, and it's harder for an attacker to intercept all that information because you have to intercept it on each frequency. So this is, you have to intercept each path that the packets take through the network.
Cue gratuitous animation.
Yeah, here's some more animation. So you send out 3 packets to each virtual circuit, and eventually they all arrive back at the destination. Yay. Okay. Instead of sending them all down just one circuit. So now an attacker has to have a machine on each of those virtual circuits and each of those, at least 3 of those nodes up there. Okay. More feature work, SOX compliance, so you can run any protocol over PKWD.
More than just HTTP?
Yeah. More kinds of steganography. You can basically plug in, you know, if someone comes up with a cool way, another cool way to get around firewalls besides using SSL, plug that in, use that as well. And I think we're just about done. Okay. How you can help, if you're a C++ coder, you can talk to me, and I can actually give you the CVS server and all that sort of stuff. People who can test the code by running a PKBooty node.
Yeah, because we do need some large-scale testing. We don't have enough computers between the two of us to do it, so we could definitely use your help there. Third one's donations and grants. You know, we can't live on top ramen and write good code at the same time. The salt is just messing with my head.
Yes, actually, we are both working full-time on this right now.
Yeah.
We have no other job.
Yeah, that's right. We're not working for the man.
And the last thing you can do is speak out if you against censorship whenever the chance arises. So if you want more information, you can go to our newly crafted website, peak-a-booty.org. All the other ones were taken.
Yeah.
If you go to .com, you get a porn site.
Oh, actually, I like peak-a-booty.com. It's got naked women wearing the mask from the movie Scream. It's that's my kind of kink.
Or you can email me. That says paul@peakabooty.org. And I think that's it. All right, I'll put that back up.
Okay, so we're now doing Q&A.
I was wondering, do you support the idea that most anonymous remailer supports, where if I wanted to run PKBooty, but I wanted to have a little less liability, I could tell it that I'm never going to terminate a connection? Because there's the attack where, like, whatever foreign nation colludes with, like, CNN or something like that, and they detect connections, they try and detect connections from PKBooty servers and track me back down that way. As being the terminating the connection into the public internet. So is there any way to not make it so I'm never that last node?
Yeah. I'm not sure if that's in there right now, but it's definitely planned for. I think if you say you're a censored node, that you never terminate a connection. Or no, that's not true. But yeah, there'll definitely be a configuration option for that.
Hi, there are 2 hacks that I'm curious how you guys handle. The first one is DNS, the second one is SSL related. For DNS, what do you do if you're behind the country's firewall, they're handling all DNS resolution, and you ask for the IP address of CNN, and they reply, yeah, big government server, come and get it, and we're going to come and get you.
Okay, well, if you're a censored node, you should never terminate a connection, right? Because then you'll try to fetch a web page, and you won't be able to get it, right? So it doesn't make sense for a censored node to terminate a connection. So they won't look up CNN.com.
And my other question is, for SSL, you know, the certificates that these various PKBooty nodes have, I don't think they'd be able to get signed by VeriSign. So what prevents the country's firewall from just going ahead, rerouting all SSL traffic to some other machine, which is going to have much less bandwidth, and just goes ahead and say, well, take a look here. This is a non-signed SSL certificate. I'm going to ban it, quote unquote, because it wouldn't be secure for e-commerce anyway.
Right. That's a good argument. There's 2 answers to that. One is you can do perfect forward security in SSL. which supposedly no one uses, using a Diffie-Hellman exchange followed by a normal certificate exchange. The second, but you know, then they could say, well, no one uses this, so we're going to block that mode or whatever, right? So that's one argument. But the second answer I have for that is, well, there's also sites out there that use unsigned certificates or certificates that aren't signed by the major guys, right? And are they going to block those? And you know, on a one-off basis, you know, it gets lots of man hours in there to do all that sort of stuff. So what the sort of goal is to just make it hard enough so that they don't bother, right?
You mentioned the crowds paper in your talk earlier. The crowds people chose static routes for the routing through the network because they considered it more secure in terms of external monitoring than random routing. Why did you make a change?
Okay, why did we make a change? Well, we didn't really think about it, but...
Talk to me afterwards, then.
It's easier to track people down,
it's,
right?
It's because a really long argument, but essentially you have to... It depends on what the opponent capacity is, whether they're better at monitoring links or subverting nodes.
But you still have to do some serious traffic analysis to figure out where the connections
are. The shorter explanation on why spread spectrum techniques on the internet are not obviously as secure is that if the plain text you're looking for is not reconstruction of the connection, but reconstruction of any relationship between the two nodes, you're generating more different paths to generate a relationship information by going over multiple paths. The issue is really complicated. There's not a lot of academic research on it. I'm in touch with the people who are thinking about it that I know of. We'll talk offline.
Okay, we'll talk later.
You noticed in your demonstration, I noticed in your demonstration, you probably noticed before I did, but there is a field for trusted yes or no, and I think that's important because there's nothing to stop the benevolent attacker from setting up their own Peekabooty node and logging the IPs that connect to it and sending people after them. So how does Grandma know whether or not to trust a node? And how does that trust mechanism work?
Okay, well, I didn't explain the trusted mechanism, actually. What you would have on the internet is just people you trust for some reason. They belong to an organization. They're your friend, whatever. They're going to terminate all of your connections through this, and then you basically make another layer of encryption, end-to-end encryption through the network to that trusted node, and no one can sniff your data in between. That is a hard usability problem, I think is what you're talking about, but...
Even if you encrypt all that traffic, there's still the thing. Your host connected to another host via TCP. And so that host is going to get your IP address unless you spoofed and sniffed somehow. So how do you know whether or not that first node you connect to is the man and they just log your IP no matter what encryptor you use?
Right, you don't. That's the risk you take.
Let me just handle a phone question here. Somebody actually just phoned in and... Len told me they hit the Peekabooty site already, the downloads area, and there's still nothing. That's because we've been working on polishing up the app. If you email Paul at paul@peek-a-booty.org, that email address up there, we'll give you we'll basically give you the CVS route for the CVS server, and you can download it to your heart's content. So yeah, the website's still pretty largely under construction.
Okay, I've got the two obligatory P2P questions here, which is like, one of which is particularly harsh on this. How do you do initial discovery? Because then you've got that IP address, and presumably you're like smuggling it through under people's tongues.
Yeah.
And then if somebody catches that, they've got one IP address that they can block. And the other one is just this NAT question, which nodes can run behind NAT? And is it any use to run a Peekabooty node off your little DSL line? Behind that.
Okay. Initial discovery, there's no mechanism to do that besides someone sending you through email or some out-of-band means. Here's a Peekabooty node. There's been plenty of ideas I could talk for another hour about all the ideas that have gone around for doing initial discovery, but it's, as everyone knows, it's really hard to do.
Unfortunately, you have to do it the old-fashioned way, which is basically getting it through friends of friends, through the underground, but there have been dissident movements for hundreds of years, and that probably still is the safest way to do initial discovery. Give us enough money, actually, and I will personally fly to China with an IP address written down on a piece of paper and a condom that I swallow.
Okay. Well, for people that aren't behind, that aren't censored, we could obviously use just a central server, say, or a set of central servers saying, okay, just come here to get some nodes, right? And we could control that. But, of course, that opens up the legal ramifications. NAT is, you specify who's behind a NAT so you know who you can and can't connect to. The people behind a NAT can connect out to people not behind a NAT, but still route connections since they're connected out to from behind it. Yeah.
Could you please expand somewhat on your on one issue that you raised earlier, the limiting the number of connection setup requests? I'm wondering how this rate limitation is taking place. Is this on a per requesting IP basis? Is this on a per peekabooty node to which requests are being made? If you could expand on this somewhat, perhaps with an eye towards the fact that the attacker, in particular the operator of the firewall, probably has roughly on order of magnitude the same number of IP addresses available for potential attacks as there are IP numbers behind the firewall. So if you could expand on this topic a bit more. Thank you.
Okay. Right. So an attack. You're saying basically the. It's done on an IP basis. How many discovery requests have I seen from that IP address? So all your neighbor nodes will also be suppressing discovery requests as well. So if any one of them acts out, you know that that guy's bad because he should be suppressing them. Okay. What?
How do you know the IP number? It's coming in through a proxy.
Well, you know the IP number of your neighbor, and that's it. So if he's acting bad, you know it. You know it has to be him because, or a bug in the software. But no, if each node is suppressing, saying, oh, I only want 2 discovery requests per minute, if he sees a discovery request, he shouldn't propagate it on if he's gotten more than that from that guy. So each node can regulate itself. If a firewall or the bad guys say, oh, I'm going to use 10,000 IP addresses to connect to Peekabooty and get all the nodes that way, well, they can. But that's a hell of a lot of effort. I'm going to run 10,000 nodes just to defeat Peekabooty. Okay, that's insane, I think, because. But how the IP is going to get back to you if you spoof them?
My nick is answering all 10,000.
Oh, okay.
So actually, your description just actually showed a fix to that. Since they have a limited set of nodes to begin with,
right,
they're having to do discovery through those limited set of nodes. So that means even if the attacker has 10,000 IP addresses, it's 10,000 requests through a limited set of nodes, which then have to ask other nodes. Those limited set of nodes they already knew about will quickly be blocked by all those other nodes,
right,
and they don't really have the 10,000 IP addresses. They only know a small bit of the network, and that small bit of the network will get shut down even with this large-scale attack.
Right. So everyone starts out the same, no matter how many IP addresses you have.
Okay, we're going to have just 3 more questions.
Just want to remark on the firewall on the firewall capability you mentioned at the beginning. There is a hardware in the pipeline which is going to do content switching based on hundreds of thousands of regular expressions, okay? So you'll be able to content switch on hundreds of thousands of full regular expressions at gigabit speeds. And that is going to be current by end of this year or maybe beginning next year. So that's the next thing you have to be aware of,
okay,
making these things.
Which is what the
Okay, thanks. Yeah, well, that's why we made it so that you can switch out your steganography in the program. So in case like someone figures out a way to block it, then you figure out a different way to get around it. You're saying the cost is going down. So.
The hundreds of millions of people who are over here, who are behind firewalls right now, I'm sure they're the ones who have the urgent need for this, and they know exactly how far they can tweak their local authorities, and they know what risks they're going to take. Do you know what they're using right now to fulfill these needs? Because they're probably not waiting for this.
I think they're using Triangle Voice. Well, they used to use SafeWeb. They used to use, anonymizer.com. I'm not sure if that's still around. Yeah. Their friends, proxies. You know, if you're like one of us, obviously you probably know someone else in another country, say, why don't you set up a proxy for me, et cetera, et cetera. But the average Joe user won't do that, right? So that's what Peekaboo is for, is to make it easy for average people to do it.
I have a question about node discovery from your prior slide that's sort of like Lucky's question. What would prevent a rogue Peekabooty node client from coming up and just slowly garnering IP addresses at whatever the current throttling rate is? I mean, doesn't that seem like a viable passive attack that I could get them all over the course of days or weeks or a month?
Yeah, well, the key is, to keep the number of nodes you discover less than the rate of new nodes joining the network. To accomplish that, you would have to adjust your time and your request responses dynamically so that if nodes stop joining the network, you answer less discovery requests or something like that. Yes, you don't want to be able to discover all the nodes in the network ever. This doesn't guarantee it, of course, if you just think about it for a few seconds. So there's still work to be done.